Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome, everyone, to a special year-end edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's day two of 6 days of year-end awards bestowed upon various political figures by both of us. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We'll be looking at three different categories today. The always somber Sorry to See You Go, the figure from 2014 who passed away this year. We also have rising star politically and political figures fading into oblivion. And Jim, I'll go first, and we'll start with those who passed this year. And I have to do a doubleheader, unfortunately, just like I did last year because of another death in our own family. Last year, we bid farewell to my wife's grandmother, Dorothy Lux. This year, her grandfather on the other side passed away, Ramsey Pollard, at the age of 83, one of a kind. He had many different careers. He was a music pastor, worked in PR, he worked in travel, also hosted a radio show for a number of years, about 20 years, about travel. So my kids get it from both sides of the family. They're pretty much hopeless. They're going to have some sort of presentation skills along the way, hopefully. Married for 61 years. Very kind man, but also a very quick and sometimes cutting wit. So he always had to be careful. And he had great hearing. So he'd be quietly sitting in the corner of the room. And just when you thought he wasn't paying attention to anything, he'd zing you. So he always had to be on your toes. In his eulogy, my father-in-law said of his father-in-law, he was faithful to God and God's people, and that's a pretty great legacy. He lost a battle of cancer earlier this year, and he's missed greatly. As far as the political figure this year, there weren't a ton of huge names from American politics, but one that didn't get a lot of attention probably should. In 1969, a guy named Donald Rumsfeld left his seat in Congress from the state of Illinois to take a job in the Nixon administration. And the guy who won the special election was a guy named Phil Crane. He was a conservative's conservative long before the movement was cool. This obviously happened after Goldwater, but of course Goldwater had gotten shellacked back in 1964, and we were still several years away from the Reagan Revolution. Phil Crane's a guy who went to Washington desiring to make sure government was as small as humanly possible. He served for many, many years, finally lost the seat, I believe, in 2004, but at the time was the longest-serving Republican in the House. And my favorite Phil Crane story, in addition to the fact that he shares my alma mater of Hillsdale, he was showing a new member of Congress from the Republican side the automated voting system on the House floor at a time when Democrats were in the majority. And he said, here's where you swipe your card. Vote yes on defense and to adjourn. Vote no on everything else. So Phil Crane died this year at the age of 84, and he definitely set the bar high for conservatives to follow, and he will be missed.
Greg, I'm glad you picked him, because I was thinking about it, and I came up with another possibility, but I figured he should not go unmentioned on this podcast. And you pointed out it was really not a year where that many major political figures died. It's always nice to see death having a rebuilding year.
Yes.
So it's only tangentially related to politics, but he was known for impersonating a few major folks in the world of political realm. That's Robin Williams. Ronald Reagan on Saturday Night Live, William F. Buckley in a sketch that I only discovered recently and found pretty fascinating. I think everybody was kind of shocked by it, and I think it really forced a lot of serious public thinking and discussion about depression and how and suicide, and how those factors we've always – it's kind of lurked in our consciousness, this possibility that people might be, you know, hiding a great deal of despair and the difficulties of getting them the help that they need. There's probably no better case to illustrate that this thing is the depression is not merely a matter of being feeling down or feeling sad about things going on in your life. That there is a major physiological component that makes a person feel sad, even in circumstances most of us would consider to be happy. Robin Williams brought joy to audiences probably like nobody else in his generation. Had, you know, tons of friends, family, people who admired him and his work. A seriously saluted serious actor, in addition to his manic comedy skills. And I think of all the losses of 2014, this is the one that we're going to be most baffled by and kind of be missing the most in the years to come.
Definitely the most shocking one of the year. I still remember exactly where I was when I got the notification on my phone that that he had lost his life and had taken his own life. So definitely one that I think most people remember from 2014. On to rising political star, and this is a name most people probably don't know yet because he just got elected to Congress, but he's one who will probably be known pretty quickly, especially once we get to the continuing resolution on spending and the Homeland Security and just spending and government size in general. A guy named Glenn Grothman. He was a state senator in Wisconsin, one of Scott Walker's most staunch allies in the big fight over collective bargaining in 2011. He announced he was challenging the longtime sitting incumbent Republican, Tom Petri. He'd been there since the 1970s. Petri then decided not to run, kicked off a very competitive primary, which Grothman barely won. Whether you like the Tea Party caucus, whether you don't like the Tea Party caucus, it's a name that's going to be out there, and it's going to be out there soon when this new Republican majority in both chambers arises next year.
That's a really good choice. I'm going to go I had two choices. I always have a backup in case you end up picking the one I had originally selected. Two kind of close to home, and two I think are more well-known, but I think we'll be hearing more of them in the future. The first was kind of the surprise, shocking candidate for the Republicans this cycle, Ed Gillespie. I could have gone with Hogan in Maryland, but I think, Ed Gillespie coming so close in a race in Virginia Senate that absolutely nobody expected, and demonstrating that he knew how to run against Mark Warner and how to remain under the radar screen until it was almost too late for Mark Warner, has earned him a lot of respect in Republican circles, whether he likes it or not, whether he admits it or not. He is the front runner for Republicans in the gubernatorial race of 2017. I think temperamentally, he's probably better suited to the job of a governor than a senator. And I think that there is great potential for Ed Gillespie being a successful governor and a major leader in the party in the years to come. Also here in Virginia, I'm just going to also mention the newly elected Congresswoman Barbara Comstock. You want to talk about somebody who has it was fascinating to see during that primary fight, people trying to argue Barbara Comstock was not some sort of serious conservative. Because this was somebody who was on the staff of Dan Burton back in the late 90s, okay? You want to talk about somebody who was making Democrats' lives miserable. The Washington Post called her maybe the single most effective GOP operative on Capitol Hill back in those Clinton days. Went to work in the Virginia State Assembly, managed to represent Frank Wolf's district, which is not a rock-ribbed, hardcore conservative district. It's about an R+2. Did a good job, beat back, was a heavily hyped and perhaps overhyped Democratic Canada cycle. She's now a freshman congresswoman taking office, and I think she too is someone to keep an eye on. And perhaps someday down the road, a senatorial bid will be in her future. So I should mention she was one of the very first people to like the Kerry spot on Tasha's Review Online back in 2004. So I've always been a fan of her, but I think there are bigger things in her future as well.
Could be. Tim Kaine's up in a midterm year, if I'm not mistaken, in 2018. Yeah. So we'll see how quickly she may have higher ambitions, but I'm sure she definitely will make a mark and soon in the House of Representatives. Excellent choice there. All right, on to political figures fading into an oblivion. And you talk about a rebuilding year for death. It's definitely a bumper crop year for folks fading into oblivion. And anytime you get a massive midterm election wave, that's going to happen. My choice officially is the Senate Democrat incumbents who lost, but a particular focus on two that I'm almost certain are never coming back. And that's Mary Landrieu and Mark Pryor. Not only did they lose and lose badly in their reelection fights, Pryor to Tom Cotton and Landrieu to Bill Cassidy in the runoff, but the way they conducted themselves in this attempt to keep their seats is just despicable. Pryor was all over the map on a whole host of issues. First, he was avoiding Obamacare, then he embraced it, and then he was basically trying to use Tom Cotton's military service against him, arguing that he felt entitled to the seat somehow. Mary Landrieu then basically saying the same people who had elected her three times were racist and sexist, and that's why she was having trouble this time. And then she tried to claim that Bill Cassidy had no role in the response to Katrina, when in fact he set up a surge hospital since he was a doctor in the parking lot of a flooded Kmart. And so it's just the pathetic attempt, in addition to the fact that they're going away. Good riddance, Mary Landrieu and Mark Pryor.
Two good choices, although I got to say, Greg, there are Louisiana Democrats who are saying Landrieu should try to come back.
good.
which is good for us. I think it says something about their bench at state. If they're like, yeah, let's try the one who just didn't, just tried and flopped in the runoff this time. I thought in some ways Obama's kind of an easy pick. The discussion is already shifting towards 2016. The center of gravity in the Democratic Party discussions is shifting towards Hillary versus potentially Elizabeth Warren. He's increasingly a lame duck. We saw in the budget fight a whole bunch of Pelosi and a bunch of Democrats defy the way he wanted them to vote. So there's an argument made for Obama, but he's still going to be president for 2 years, and he's going to, you know, so you can't say he's totally into oblivion. So in a different direction, one that also dominated news in the last month, I think the New Republic magazine is never going to be the same, and there's a part of me that would not be the least bit surprised to see it shut down entirely within a couple of years. We all kind of heard the story of the new owner, Chris Hughes, the famous inventor of the poke button on Facebook, who has $1 billion, buying it, pledging that he understood the history of the magazine, its significance, its prominence in intellectual circles, and its role in American political debate, keeping it the way it was for about a year, then bringing in a guy who, one, wanted to turn it into a chain of cafes. I'm not kidding. And then he said it was a vertically integrated media entity, fired the editor, fired the literary editor, and then watched, I believe, like 40 staffers walk out in solidarity, saying that, like, look, they didn't like the way this is going. And I think there's really kind of a fascinating little story to be told here about what happens when somebody with a ton of money comes in claiming they know what they're doing, claiming they know what they're buying, and then probably within like 2 years destroys it, runs it into the ground, doesn't understand its purpose, doesn't understand why people love the institution, doesn't understand why people work for the institution. And that even though the New Republic could drive me bonkers, and I think it had been drifting further leftward, I mean, not, you know, I'm not really losing a beloved magazine in this. I don't like seeing well-established, you know, media publications, one that literally had just celebrated the 100th anniversary, collapsing in quite rapidly. And I think it's kind of a sad observation. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I bet you in like 4 years there may not be a paper New Republic to hold in your hand.
Even though it tilted to the left, it was a critical part of the discussion in Washington, because it is good to know what folks from all different stripes are thinking. Jim, very briefly there, you were talking about people coming in, don't know how to run an institution, and absolutely running the thing into the ground. As Jets and Bears fans, I was starting to get a little worried there.
Well, as I said, that, you know, when everybody was walking out to all the New Republic staffers, who I genuinely do feel bad for, there are a lot of Americans who know exactly how it feels to have a new guy come in, claim he knows what he's doing, and run the place into the ground.
That's right. And somehow he got reelected.
Yeah.
Jim, hope you had a great Christmas. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a wonderful weekend. Join us again on Monday for the next installment of our year-end awards on the 3 Martini Lunch.